Greetings, fellow tech junkies and innovation nerds, and welcome to the new special series, The Green Spoon, an exploration into the art, science, and ethos of food that nourishes both our bodies and our planet. As we embark on this voyage, we'll unearth the layers of sustainable food practices and introduce the culinary maestros shaping the future of eco-conscious dining. Settle in as we plate up knowledge and inspiration for a greener tomorrow. Today, we're taking you to Brussels, to Hummus and Hortense, an award-winning plant-based haven that's redefining what it means to dine sustainably. Join me as I chat with visionaries Nicolas Declet and Caroline Bartin about their journey in creating a restaurant where exquisite flavors and eco-responsibility merge seamlessly. Ready for a taste of innovation? Let's get started. How, Caroline and Nicolas?
Hello.
How are you?
Very well. Thank you so much for this invitation. It's wonderful to have a conversation with you, Sharon.
Well, thank you for your time. I know how busy it is to have a restaurant and running a kitchen. So thank you for your time. I am very curious to learn more about your journey into a more sustainable gastronomy. So can you tell us how you got started and what led you to do what you're doing today?
Well, Nicolas and I, we started in 2008 when we met each other. We are partners, not only in the restaurant, but also in life. And we share from the beginning the same passion about a love for Mother Earth, you could say. And from out of that love, we wanted to express it through food and change the food system. So in 2008, we started with what we call the Food Collective, Hummus Botanical Gastronomy. And that was more a gathering of like-minded people around the long table, about 20, 22 persons for a very exclusive tasting dinners. And that's something that we have done for a couple of years that could happen in our house. We have a house in Brussels of the 1930s, so really a charming house, but then also in art galleries and et cetera, really great places that where we could offer these kind of dinners. And then in 2016, we opened our restaurant, Hummus and Hortense, so the actual restaurant now.
Oh, that's amazing. I love that concept. And you both are chefs? Like, you started as chefs or you were doing something else before? How did you get into cooking?
I think...
Or who's the chef?
that's a fun one. We both have a background in art. But I believe that the passion we already had for cooking came through again. And it's something that we've always liked, both of us. But especially when we were younger, going to culinary school wasn't something that was very supported in general, because it was seen more as an education for somebody that didn't want to do anything else or couldn't do anything else. So we both stayed more in the more classical path of doing studies. And then we ended up both in the arts world, but we found each other, or we met each other at a culinary school in Belgium.
Oh, that's amazing. And definitely how the tables have turned, right, for chefs that now have a very important role, I would say, into this food system transformation. And so how did you develop the concept of botanical gastronomy? You have a plant-based cuisine, and what makes it distinct from other types of cuisine?
Well, as I said, we from the beginning started this concept of Hummus Botanical Gastronomy, and hummus is actually referring to the living soil, the fertile soil where all life is coming from, and that has been always the focus of what we've been doing. So, or let's say our main goal is to change the food system, the actual current food system, which is so industrialized and is nefast for the living earth and the living soil. So we started from the beginning collaborating with local farmers. And from there, there is one specific farmer, Dries Delanotte, from his farm, which called Le Monde Mille Couleurs, which is like the world of the thousand colors. It's a wild farm. It's permaculture.
Wow.
It's biodynamic farming. It's really a combination of working and living on the rhythm of nature. And that's basically what we are also doing with the restaurant. One of the focal points of botanical gastronomy is that we often you hear from farm to table, but we say from soil to plate, because all life is coming from the soil. And that is basically one of the five principles of botanical gastronomy. Another aspect is plant-based. So all the ingredients that we use are plant-based. So there are no animal-based ingredients in our cuisine, because this is our lifestyle. So we can't separate our own personal choices with our professional activities. So everything what we do in our personal life is also expressed in the restaurant and vice versa. So there's no greenwashing at all, you could say. So that is another aspect of botanical gastronomy. And then you have the aspect of hyper-locality, hyper-seasonality, and the zero-waste principles, which are also important in botanical gastronomy.
Absolutely. And in terms of the zero-waste principles, can you give us an example of how you achieve it?
Maybe the nicest example is how the kitchen and the bar or the drinks session collaborate. So that's also something we do different from most restaurants. We do not serve only wines with the food. And then mainly Caroline is creating cocktails and mocktails, which are served with a specific dish. And to create those cocktails, which we call botanical cocktails and mocktails, she uses the leftovers of what the kitchen is using in that same dish. Or the other option is that she uses an ingredient that our farmer Dries has too much on the field. And that's also a way for us to help him to reduce the food loss. So I think that is like a very easygoing example.
Yes, that's amazing. And obviously by using all of the ingredients that you have at your disposal, which is very important. And how do you innovate in terms of the culinary experience or the actual cooking? I know that you have an idea of not just four seasons, but for example, 24 micro seasons. What are they? And what challenges or opportunities?
Well, 24 micro seasons is something that we realized by working together so closely with our organic farmer Dries, that he started pointing out different vegetables which are at their peak of flavor and at different timings. For example, classic example is, of course, let's say white asparagus, but then you have also in spring all the little shoots that are coming. He has, for example, leeks, which is, you know, very common vegetable, and that is actually also a combination with it. The food loss on the field a couple of years ago, he couldn't harvest all the leeks before winter time, and so he left them on the field. And he realized in spring that there were like baby shoots coming from inside the mother leek. And so we started experimenting with that and doing tests. And they turned out very delicious, very delicate, very refined and subtle flavor. And that is something that is very limited in time. So just, let's say, 2-3 weeks that we can work with these baby shoots from the leek. So that is an example of how we work together with our farmer. He informs us about all the very specific vegetables and herbs and plants that are growing and at their peak. And then we started creating a dish around that. So we have a tasting menu, about 10 different dishes. Mm-hmm. And you could say every 2 weeks, there is one of those different dishes that are changing in our tasting menu. So after 1 month, the whole tasting menu will be changed. And that's a completely other approach than what you would have in, let's say, classic fine dining restaurants, where they have a set menu for two, let's say 3-4 months, and then they change. And we really follow the rhythm of nature. If Dries has a certain vegetable no longer available due to climate or due to weather circumstances or just the end of that vegetable in growing season, we don't go to the supermarket to prolong that dish in our tasting menu. We just stop with it and we create something different what he has available. So it is really this very close relationship that makes us so distinct, and that helps us also to follow the 24 micro seasons.
Well, that's amazing, and also obviously a lot of work in terms of having to come up with new and different things.
Yes,
right,
we also have a team that is very creative. But that's something that we love, again, as Nicolas said, from our more artistic background. I'm an art historian and also the ceramist in the restaurant. And Nicolas, he's an art photographer, so we can really express our love for art and beauty and aesthetics through the dishes and the plates that we create.
So you're also, you do also ceramic design, Carolyn. And I guess, yes, how does your background in art history influence your design in ceramics, and how do they complement the culinary experience?
Well, it first starts with, of course, the interior, because that is part of the fine dining experience that our guests will have. So we have, our restaurant is in a building which is around the 1900s, and it has some Art Nouveau elements, which is a typical kind of architecture that we have, that we are known for in Brussels. So there was this existing building which I decorated by respecting what was already there and then adding touches of craftsmanship to that interior. So there is a collaboration for the tables with the local craftsman who makes from oak, from Belgian oak, makes beautiful tables, which are also with these typical curves that you have in Art Nouveau. The chairs are, for example, also collaboration with the Belgian and the Brussels designer. And then what is on the table, you could say the plates, they are aligned with what is on the plates at a certain point. So like the colors of the vegetables, we match also with the colors of the glazes of the different plates that I create. So everything, I don't sell to other people, it's tailor-made for the restaurants. So for example, the last collection that I made was like little holders for the vegetable, the plant-based butter that we make. So this is like a little plateau that is made for it, or I make, let's say, the plates or the cups for the tea and the coffee, and everything is like custom-made for the restaurant in terms of forms and what we need, but then also in terms of the glazes that we play with it according to the seasons and the colors of the vegetables.
Wow, that's amazing. And you mentioned, Nicolas, have a background in photography. So how does that influence?
I guess in two kind of ways. Of course, I'm quite interested in aesthetics. So I'm always looking for a very refined and calm plating in the dish. So I don't like things being too busy. Mm-hmm. And secondly, I draw a lot of inspiration from arts and from just visual inspiration in general, that in some kind of way makes me think about a certain vegetable, about the color, about the form. And then with Caroline and I, we just start like ping-ponging about it, about the idea and how we're going to create it and how we're going to put it on a plate finally.
Can we dive a little bit deeper into this? So let's say, and obviously you have this amazing collaboration with Dries Delanoë. And so he tells you what he has in his farm. And then you gather all these wonderful vegetables. Is it just vegetables or you use other things as well? And in terms of the plant world, and then what's the process? What's your creative process?
Well, so first of all, I guess that like almost all the vegetables, herbs, and flowers the whole year round come from his farm. And of course, he has a collaboration with two or three farmers that live and work close to him and that also work in the same philosophy. And so we call each other at least twice, sometimes even more a week. We are aware of what there is, what there will be in the next couple of weeks, which ingredient won't be available anymore, so that we can anticipate and we can start the tests. And then we just apply that vegetable or that herb or whatever to the idea we have. And it's, to be really honest, it's quite complicated to explain how we really work. We do a first test and then we taste the test and we just refine. And I try to think about an example because that might be a little easier to explain or a bit more clear. One of the dishes that we're having actually is a red beetroot dish. I had the idea of doing something quite monochrome in the dish. The idea finally was to choose like small beets, because that's also an advantage we have, that with this, whenever it is possible, we can really select sizes of the vegetables for a specific dish that he does select as for us. So we decided to stuff them. And for that, we use like a sweet and sour preparation of beets, some fermented black currants. And we serve it with a sauce that we roughly inspired on a Mexican mole. And then in which we use some nuts and some chocolate and some homemade miso to flavor it. But then, and we also serve it in a like a darker plate. So you have the dark plate, you have a brown, deep brown sauce, and then a glazed, rather dark red beetroot. And so that just comes from seeing a painting that is quite monochrome and darkish, of which you could refer to like Mark Rothko.
Yeah, no, that sounds amazing. And what are other examples of dishes that people that were extremely successful with your patrons?
Well, last autumn we created, it's not a very seasonal product, the wild mushrooms. So we have a forager that goes into the forests in the south of the country to hunt for mushrooms. We wanted to create a dish with that. And to be really honest, I even don't remember how I came up with the idea of making a kind of tofu homemade. And then the next idea was, okay, but let's not do it with soybeans. That has been done. So we came up with the idea of doing it with sunflower seeds. And so we have this tofu and that we created that we serve with the wild mushrooms. And then we always create misos and garums. And garum is like basically a fermented sauce that we also make out of wild mushrooms, and that ferments for a couple of months. So it becomes really rich and umami. And so it was like, this was like the perfect 5-minute creation dish. So you have this tofu, mushrooms, and then we created the sauce around the mushrooms. And yeah, from day one, that was like the big hit in the menu then.
So also, I mean, you're in Belgium, you mentioned. Does being the Belgian terroir, does that influence your culinary creations, and how is it unique to other places?
We definitely do try to integrate like the typical Belgian cuisine, because in some kind of way we use hyper-local ingredients. But of course, a lot of the ingredients that are common today or that we use are not always, their roots, let's say, are not always European or Central European. For example, potato or a tomato, those are easy examples of ingredients that come from basically far away one day. And now they're one of the most common ingredients that we have in our cooking. But this is the best or the only season for Belgian endives. And which have been created here in Brussels in the botanical garden. And that's it's a great ingredient that we always love to use because it's slightly bitter, it's rich. You can give it a lot of different textures. And so that's a recurrent ingredient, main ingredient in our tasting menu.
And how do you get around those ingredients that maybe are not super hyper-local? Like you mentioned chocolate, for example. How do you get around those kind of ingredients?
For that, we specifically work with small roasters in Brussels as well. So we do have this collaboration with one specific chocolate roaster. You call them chocolate makers. I know that you can always have long discussions about, for example, chocolate. But the thing is that in Belgium and Brussels, chocolate is so deeply rooted in our culture. It's a very, very tough one to take it out because chocolate is Belgian, more or less, and as a waffle. And so that's why it is, we believe it is too difficult to take it out. It's heritage.
And what we do, we not only in that sense, in terms of chocolate production, as we are collaborating together with, again, small-scale, family-owned producers, then farmers in the South that we support. So in any case, we will never support like big industries, but shoes for small-scale farmers who get like an honest price for their harvest. So that kind of transparency and traceability is something that we are that we pay a lot of attention to.
And also with things where I would assume, and especially with things like cocoa, let's call it fair trade, is extremely important, right? Especially if you want to maintain a sustainability aspect.
So, and about chocolate, like a little anecdote. At the end of the tasting menu, people receive like a small praline, like a bonbon of chocolate, which it's a collaboration with a farmer, the chocolate maker, and us. So a couple of years ago, Dries, he had an abundance of very aromatic shiso leaves in his garden. He couldn't do anything with that. And basically the harvest was about getting lost. So to tackle the food loss in the field, we bought all the shiso leaves. We asked a food scientist we know and collaborate often with to make an extract of the flavors of this shiso leaf and infuse it in a ganache, so the chocolate ganache, which was then made by the chocolate maker and is now served at the end of a tasting menu. And that is an example of how you could say upcycle or upgrade something that is about going lost in the field and make something delicious with it.
Yeah, like, I mean, the zero waste philosophy is something that is so very important. And you gave us a little bit of an example there and before as well. Are there any other innovative techniques, actual techniques that you use to minimize waste?
Well, as mentioned before, we also make a lot of misos ourselves. So regularly, we also make miso out of vegetables. And that can be with vegetables, that can be with mushrooms. That's also a way that we sometimes help these out to just tackle the food loss. We make our plant-based or vegan garums, as mentioned, with the mushroom, for example. We always have a couple of them, of those running with different ingredients. I think, as mentioned in the beginning, so the food waste or anti-food waste, it goes through the drinks pairing, but also through what we make in the back office and the ingredients that you don't see in the plate, because like a garum, a miso, they're never exposed on themselves, but they are always used in a cream, in the sauce or whatever. But they really contribute the flavor and to the umami and to the richness that we want to bring in our cuisine.
Absolutely. And what other practices are integral to the restaurant in terms of sustainability?
Yeah, and that's an interesting question because we are not just plant-based fine dining restaurant. We are a sustainable restaurant, and that is expressed in, for example, energy consumption. Let's say everything that has to do with electricity, so that we use like a green provider of the green electricity and the water consumption. So the whole team is on a weekly basis informed about the water consumption, which we try to reduce in different ways. For example, cleaning the vegetables, reusing the water for the plants later that we have in front of the house. So it's like this circular way of thinking of all the resources that we have. But also sustainability is expressed in the tables. It's not just made by a local craftsman, but it is made of oak from specific forests. So it's a certified oak. So by making it in manufacturing it in Brussels, we can also reduce the footprint, the carbon footprint of transport. And for example, also the clothing is made by a Brussels designer. Also, with an organic, made from organic tissue, organic textile. So that is really beyond the plate and the glass that we maximize our sustainable way of working and minimalize the footprint that we have on the earth. We even have a person in our team that's about 14 people that we have now in our team, only for 10 tables. So it's a really fine dining. One of our staff members, he's also responsible for sustainability on a weekly basis in our meeting. He proposes different ideas and then we start implementing. He starts monitoring if the implementation of those ideas are going well and doing follow-up on that. So constantly we basically are improving our sustainable approach.
Well, that's amazing. And do you guys have any future goals in terms of the culinary innovation, but also in sustainability? What's your vision for the future?
I think that since we're on this path and we've been on this path for quite a while, what is the most interesting is that we notice that with the experience, we can always move along and move further and raise the level of what we're doing. So we're, I think if you ask us what are the goals, and then we want to become even more sustainable. And with just the experience we have is that, what can we do better? How can we even maybe change our practice, our daily practices? Are there any ways to make things even more green, more sustainable, less consumption? And that's what we're, and also thanks to technology that's changing. So maybe in 5 years, technology will even be better, and then we can shift this or that practice or use a new technology just to even reduce our consumption of energy, for example.
And also I'm planning to do some tests with glazes, for example, for the ceramics. And I want to use the ashes from our Japanese barbecue and use these ashes, which are otherwise thrown away, for the glazes of the plates and the ceramics that I use. So again, rethinking food waste in the restaurants and how we can then upgrade it into another aspect that makes things more interesting.
Wow, that's super interesting. In the past years, I guess there's been a lot of attention to the plant-based movement, and you yourself have received a lot of accolades and awards. So has this influenced the perception of plant-based fine dining, not just in your community because of the restaurant, but overall, like in Europe and the rest of the world?
Well, I think all of these rewards and accolades are, of course, always very flattering. But I think it's for the outside world that might be, in the beginning, less into this sustainable approach, which is very new in fine dining. For them, it might be just that small hand that reached or that help that they, so that they do realize that this way of cooking and serving food and running a restaurant might be interesting. And it might be that little push in the back to try it, of which that they wouldn't have done it otherwise. And that's very interesting because we do realize that with those accolades, through those accolades, we do get people that would never ever come in an otherwise. And so we can also show them what is possible and we can inspire them. And that's very interesting because maybe if we inspire them, they will come back to our restaurant or they also might go to another similar restaurant. And who knows, at some point they might also incorporate some of those ideas or principles or whatever in their daily life.
Yes, and we, for example, we received last year a Michelin star, which has a lot of impact on the perception of plant-based fine dining. Basically, we were the first plant-based fine dining restaurant in Belgium who received this star. And on the level of guests, of course, we have now other kind of people coming to a restaurant who would otherwise not think about going to a plant-based restaurant. So we could reach another, let's say, profile of guests coming to our place. So that impact was huge.
I can imagine. Congratulations on that. And that's the sort of engagement also with the community, right? That you are getting all these different people to try plant-based dining and therefore showing that it's not what people might think vegan food is. It can be very tasty. I think there is a negative connotation, or there has been a negative connotation on what vegan food is, and you guys are redefining that, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Yes. And we are pioneers, basically.
Yes. So can you share some personal insights into your journey in creating Hummus and Hortense, and if you have faced any significant challenges, and what advice would you give to aspiring chefs that want to create sustainable, innovative dining experiences?
I think with what we are doing with our restaurant is definitely inspiring young chefs. We have a very international team there. It already starts. We have people from all over the world, South America, Asia, of course, Europe, who are coming to our restaurant. And we often call our restaurant like a plant-based academy for them. So it's a school, you could almost say, for young chefs, and who can later, when they open their own restaurants, take home this inspiration from our restaurant. Maybe just give the word to Nicolas, how he inspires young chefs.
I think it's a very important role that we have of showing young chefs what can be possible with vegetables and how you can push the boundaries. And I think it's also very good to inspire our colleagues and show them that you can run a plant-based restaurant in a successful way. And that is also financially possible to maintain. And I think if people and colleagues see that, it's a very important asset actually for them, because many times they say we're scared to do it. We can't do it. The time is not right. The city I'm in is not ready. The country I'm in is not ready. Our city wasn't ready either. Belgium wasn't ready either, because nobody was doing it by then. And even 15 years later, still almost nobody is doing it on a fine dining level. I think if we can inspire people, that's the most thing for us.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what we all work for, right? Trying to do something that has an impact and it's good for people and the planet. So I guess in terms of impact and legacy, what is that aim on more broadly the culinary world, as well as with people? Like, how do we pass that message along of what is possible? Do you think it's been hard? A lot of times I don't find it easy myself. What is your take on that?
Well, it's true. I think changing deeply ingrained habits and food patterns is not an easy thing, because it's people are, for example, very much attached to eating meat. It's really part of our food culture. What we try to do is not raise the finger and being judgmental, but rather invite people to our, let's say, culinary world. Often when guests come to a restaurant, we invite them to go on a voyage, like a culinary journey through the micro seasons of that moment. It's basically through the senses, the eyes, the smells, the taste, what they feel, that want to open the minds of people and showing that it is possible to have a culinary experience of a high level without using any animal-based ingredients. And in that sense, I think we succeeded. We are more leading towards the world of gastronomy because that is our basic, that is our background as trained chefs, than we are in the world of, let's say, the vegan community. We really wanted to create a bridge between these two worlds because we had the feeling that they were two separate. One hand, gastronomy, let's say the classic gastronomy, is often not at all sustainable. But let's say the vegan restaurants, at least the ones we have in Belgium, are not the places where you, let's say, celebrate something special moment in your life because it doesn't have this fine dining appeal. So by creating a bridge between these two worlds, we made it possible for a larger group of people to step a more sustainable way of thinking and living. So it's basically inviting people and not being judgmental.
Absolutely. Oh, that's great. And so your restaurant is in Brussels.
Yes, it is.
And if people want to come check it out, what's the website or what part of Brussels so that our listeners can and see?
Even for, especially for foreign people, the restaurant's really easy to reach, to be really honest. We're quite central in the city of Brussels, easily reached by public transports, by foot, whatever. And for people that come from really far away, the airport is like a 15-minute train ride from the city center. And of course, we do have a website, Humus Hortense, where you can make a reservation through the application. And of course, we also do have an Instagram page, Humus Hortense, that people can follow. And where they get a lot of updates and where they can see what we're doing, how we're doing, and our daily practices.
And every booking can happen also through the website. So we have an online reservation system. But as I said in the beginning, we are a very small restaurant. So only 10 tables, which is important to know because we are easily full booked, especially in the weekends. But of course, everybody is very welcome to come and visit and explore the experience in a restaurant at Humus en Hortense.
Wonderful. So for all of us travelers, make reservations in advance. Well, thank you very, very much for your time today. It's been great to get to know you a little bit better and learn more about the impact that you are having on our gastronomy.
Thank you so much, Sharon. Thank you for this wonderful podcast. It's really lovely.
Thanks.
Want to deep dive into food innovation? Subscribe to the Food Tech Junkies series. Tune in and listen to the industry's champions, whose mission is to reinvent our future by collaborating and disrupting the status quo as a way to rebalance our planet and our daily lives. For more great food and ag tech content, visit our website at www.edibleplanetventures.com. And don't forget to follow us on social media.